Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
He inspires small business.
We can teach these barbarians a lesson in Western methods and efficiency that will put them to shame.
He tells it like it is.
I realize how difficult it's going to be in this godforsaken place where you can't find what you need. And there's the challenge.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. Thanks for being part of our day. My pleasure to be able to spend time with you. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. We're glad you're here. If you've been listening already, as you know, we consider that a sign of a high intelligence. And one of the reasons why I say that is because you're going to get a lot smarter, too, because our good friend Richard DeKayser is with us. Richard is a longtime member of our Brain Trust, a good friend of ours, senior vice president and chief economist at National City Bank. And he joins us today to talk to us about this mess we're in. How did we get here? What could we have seen? What did we learn? And also, and a little bit about some of the steps that have been taken to try to get us out. And also, we'll be talking about what the Fed's going to do this week. They've got a two-day meeting, and what are they going to do about interest rates? We'll see. We'll talk about that. And so let's get him in here. Richard DeKayser, welcome back to the show.
Good to be here, Jim. Good morning.
It's good to have you back. Let's get one thing up on the table and off the table quickly. People who follow these things, including me, know that National City, your bank, was recently purchased. An offer was made and apparently accepted by PNC Bank, correct?
That's right. PNC is based in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. National City Corporation, my company, is based in Cleveland, Ohio. The two have a little bit of overlap, but not a whole bunch. We accepted a deal from PNC on Friday, which, if all goes according to plan, and it should, will consummate December 31st of this year. The two will be one, and combined, we'll have the fifth largest share of deposits in the country.
Wow.
Well into the top end of the top 10 banks.
Right. So that's good news for National City, for their shareholders, for their customers. I think so. I think that's a logical transaction to happen, Richard, and there's going to be a lot more of that, isn't there?
Well, there sure is. We had legislation earlier this month called the Emergency Economic Stabilization Act, among other things, that allocated an enormous chunk of money for the U.S. Treasury Department to use with a lot of discretion, frankly. And the approach that seems to be favored at this point, at least early on, is to use up to $700 billion. Surely they won't use the full amount, but up to that amount. Basically to recapitalize the banking industry. The banking industry has taken big losses on mortgages, principally. It's impaired lending to the economy more generally. So the concept here is to provide funds to banks, which in turn will work their way through the financial system back to Joe Sixpack and
right.
Help stimulate economic activity.
Richard, as we look back, I mean, you're an economist, you're a pro in this area. As we look back, what could have been done, and when could it have been done? Not by your bank, not by me, but as a marketplace, as a nation. What would you say would be a date, maybe, or a year, or a moment when somebody could have said, okay, this could get out of hand. Let's make this adjustment. You got any ideas about that?
Oh, yes, I do. basically, I have two responses. One, which is very detailed and will take you through the excesses that occurred in so many aspects of our economy. Why buyers became overly optimistic, why lenders became overly optimistic, why regulators dropped the ball in some regards,
yep.
And why legislators should have been more wary of things that unfolded and weren't. And each of those mm-hmm. is an interesting story in its own right. My second response to that question is much simpler, and it simply is this. Greed becomes a powerful force that becomes very difficult to rein in once it picks up momentum. And what I'm talking about here is that throughout our history, if you just look back at the past 10 years, We had a stock market bubble. We had a housing market bubble. We had a commodity price bubble.
Right.
And it's very easy to look back on these events after the fact, and for some of us to see them as they're emerging, and say, look, this doesn't make sense. It doesn't jive with the fundamentals. Precautions ought to be taken, but the overwhelming majority do not. And that's why, of course, bubbles happen, because people ride them all the way up, thinking that they'll never end. So the first answer has a number of very specific things which, on the margin, I think could have been done to help prevent this from happening. But the second answer says we have to accept that there's a part of the human genome which is prone to excess. And in the end, I don't think it's possible completely to legislate this problem away.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I want to talk about that when we come back after these messages. And we'll do that right after these messages. 20 till the hour. Richard DeCaser is our guest. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Stay with us. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Little John Mellencamp bringing us back. Might even be John Cougar Mellencamp, depending on... I think that was in his John Mellencamp days. Anyway, we're back and it's 17 till. My websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com and askjim.biz. Richard DeCaser is our guest. I hope he'll check out... whatever he has to say, folks. And Richard, tell us how they can find your writings, your economic forecasts, and that sort of thing.
Well, very simple. Nationalcity.com and then /economics for comment and forecasts about the national economy. And for people who are interested in the housing market, nationalcity.com/house valuation.
All right, so check that out. Richard, we were talking about, you used the term greed, and you talked about it being a part of our genome, and sort of the bubbles that we've had. We had the dot-bomb bubble, as you say, in the 90s. Then we had a housing bubble. We had a mortgage bubble. Really, I think you didn't say that, but I think that was a little bit of a variation of the housing bubble. And then we had the commodities bubble, which I saw through completely. I mean, that was one of my predictions that came to pass. But I'm looking at a book, Richard, that you've heard me mention before, that speaks to your genome theory about greed, the human genome, and it was written by Charles McKay back in the 1840s. And the title of the book is Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds. Now, this thing that we're experiencing right now, Richard, has been going on forever. As long as and other people have always also heard me say, Richard, that the problem with humanity is the humans.
Well, we do some good things too.
Yeah, we do. But the thing about the greed, and see, the reason I wanted to land on that, and I'm glad you brought it up, is because this is what bothers me about this bailout situation we've got going on here.
Uh-huh.
I'm not smart enough. I'm not knowledgeable enough about what's going on, about the problem, the bigger problem, to say that I'm right and they're wrong. But I believe that the only way to cleanse humans from the greed issue and for us to wind up with a more perfect example or a better result is to let humans fail.
Uh-huh.
And when governments come in and try to put a net safety net, or in this case a tarp, a little play on words there, a tarp under us, that really troubles me. Richard, what do you think?
Well, in principle, I completely agree. I think that the whole discipline of the capitalist system is predicated on returns to success and the penalty that accompanies failure. And once you start messing with that, you run the risk of destroying all the wonders and efficiencies that result from capitalism. Now, let me just go further to say that while I completely embrace that principle in the most general sense, there can come moments, and these moments should be rare, but these moments do occur, when pursuing the interest of discipline, you can often take a lot of collateral damage. In other words, when the subprime mortgage business, which no longer exists, and 3 years ago it was accounting for about one out of every three homes sold, when that collapsed, all of a sudden a lot of innocent victims really were left high and dry, people who took out the mortgages with the belief that they'd be there, if not exactly as they were, at some future point in time. So I think it's necessary to ask these questions periodically. What's the collateral damage, and is it worth compromising that principle somewhat in order to reap the benefits that would otherwise not be available?
But what do we teach people, Richard, if somebody enters into an ill-advised mortgage, knowing that they, in their heart, really, that they didn't have the income, knowing that they couldn't perform on this thing when it adjusted? If we let people do that, and then when the chickens do come home to roost, we actually bail them out, or we allow the contract to be adjusted, or whatever. What have we taught them about when this? Because this is going to come up again, Richard. We're going to have a time like this in the future. It'll happen in 5 years or 15 years. But if people haven't been allowed to reap the consequences of their actions, what have they learned, and how will we prevent this from happening again if we don't learn those lessons?
Well, in that specific example you gave me, I would perfectly agree with you. That is, you know, for someone who got in over their head through foolishness, then the consequences should play out, and that's the way we prevent that accident from happening again.
Yeah.
However, what about when there are far, far greater numbers of people who've done that same sort of thing, not out of foolishness, but perhaps out of deception? Maybe the regulators were not enforcing the basic tenets of mortgage lending, which were imposed upon banks, but there were a lot of lenders which got around that through loopholes.
Right.
And then when those people get whacked, all of a sudden all the good people who live in their community who've been paying their mortgages day after day, year after year, find
the neighbors
in trouble because so you know, in the perfect example of bad decision making, without a doubt the discipline must play out, and that's the virtue of our system. However, when these events occur which have what economists call externalities, meaning innocent bystanders start to get whacked, then I think there's a legitimate role for the government to intervene in a way that balances this absolute imperative of maintaining market discipline against the need to prevent what economists call the
debt. My concern, now that the government's got its camel's nose under our tent, my concern is how do we get it out? That's what my concern is. We'll come back. I'm going to get Richard to tell us what he thinks about the next 12 to 24 months. And also we're going to talk about what the Fed's going to do this week. Ten till. Stay with us. I'll be right back with Richard DeCaser. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with our good friend Richard DeCaser, Chief Economist for National City Bank, and recognized as the top economist in the United States a couple of years ago by USA Today newspaper. Am I correct about that, Richard? Was that a couple of years ago?
It was 2006. I received recognition in 2007.
Yeah, how about that, folks? As I said before, ladies and gentlemen, no chopped liver on the Small Business Advocate Show, only the best for my audience. Hey, Richard, look into your little crystal ball there and give us your view of where you think the economy is going to go over the next 12 to 24 months.
Well, I think the near term is looking pretty grim, frankly, Jim. You know, what's happened in the past 2 months, September and October, is extraordinary, and I could name all the banks that have folded, and the stock market's down over 30%, almost $8 trillion in total equity wealth evaporated.
Pretty close to unprecedented. It's certainly unprecedented in modern times.
Oh, absolutely, in terms of the collapse in the financial sector. And that's taking a toll. People are finding it more difficult to get credit. Small businesses are finding it more difficult to get credit. And this is going to lead to what I think is going to be a very substantial decline in real GDP growth in the fourth, or real GDP in the fourth quarter, probably 2 to 3% down. But I do believe that the various efforts being taken, insuring deposits, insuring or guaranteeing bank debt, and buying out mortgages, capitalizing institutions, buying money market. There's a whole slew of actions, which I actually believe, on the whole, not across the board, but on the whole, are well targeted to what our economy needs and what our financial services sector needs. So when we get into next year, I don't think we're going to be in any good shape early on. In the first quarter, there's going to be a hangover still from this. But I think by the time we're in the middle of the year, we'll start seeing growth, which is more decent by historical standards, again, with GDP numbers in the 2, 2.5% range, will be in hand by the time we're in, say, middle to late 09. So a pretty rough 6 months ahead of us, but I think 1 year out we'll be in much better shape.
And one of the things that we know about the U.S. economy is when it starts turning up, it has a capability of being turbocharged, doesn't it? I mean,
well,
you.
Yep.
What do you think?
What you're talking about is it going to be a sometimes referred to as a V recession, down sharp and then up sharply, or a U where you just sort of muddle along? We've actually been in the U. We've been muddling along with just modest growth. And
all year.
At times even negative, yes, all year and much of last year as well. But I think that this harsh dive that we're in the process of suffering from right now is going to set us up for a V. I wouldn't want to be too precise in trying to time it, but I think that there's going to be a strong rebound. And it's important to remember, the two things that have been plaguing us most over the past 2 years, the housing market and high commodity prices, in one case, commodity prices have fully reversed.
Right.
And in the second case, housing is much diminished in, relative to where it was. That is to say, we're not seeing precipitous declines.
And it's creating opportunities as the credit market frees up. It's creating opportunities for people.
Well, what do you mean by
as the price, as the prices come down, as houses,
oh,
I mean those houses are there, folks. That's inventory that's not going away.
Yeah,
somebody's going to be able to buy those houses.
Every 3 months, I do this calculation. What does it cost a typical family to buy the typical house at whatever prevailing interest rates are out there? And we are now looking at the most affordable housing market, certainly more affordable than the long-term average. But even if you look back over recent decades, about as affordable an environment as we've ever seen.
Yeah.
So, and people even pretty much see it that way. Optimism about this being a good time is still pretty strong. So
right.
The problem is getting the credit flowing back to these people. And when that happens, I believe they'll
that credit. The credit thing is the unprecedented part. I think more than anything, right now in my experiences with downturns, the credit problems are where we've got some tough times. Richard, quickly, the Fed's meeting today and tomorrow. Do you think that we'll have another rate cut locally meaning the United States?
I do. You know, with all the distress that we're experiencing, I think the Fed's going to cut interest rates, taking the overnight bank rate down, the Fed funds rate down to 1%.
A half a point, then. You think they'll cut a half a point today or tomorrow?
I do, or tomorrow. And I think their motivation is really the concern that this psychological vicious cycle could get ahead of itself. And they want.
And you
to
say psychological, I think you may agree, you probably agree with me, that a lot of our problems are not in the marketplace as much as they are between our ears. What do you think?
I absolutely agree. You know, there is a palpable sense of panic which exceeds what I think, just as we talked a while ago.
It exceeds the evidence in front of us, doesn't
it? It's just the reverse right now. Yes, it is.
Yeah. Hey, Richard, thanks for being here. Good job today. We'll see you next
time. Pleasure, Jim. Take care.
Richard DeKayser, ladies and gentlemen, one of the best. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. And as you know, this program is for you. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.